This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and as English T20 cricket moves into its 20th summer, I'm joined this week by Outlaws icon David Hussey. The Aussie reigned supreme at Trent Bridge between 2004 and 2013, scoring over 10,000 runs across all formats. And he explained why he felt compelled to build such a long association with Notts.
I think we all knew that we had something special at Trent Bridge brewing. We just had to keep all the pieces of the puzzle together. I look back at it now, it's probably, it's 9-10 years, been the highlight of my life, really.
Hussey also discussed the first time he met Outlaws ever-present Samit Patel.
He walked over, this young, sort of even shy kid, and walked over, "Hi, I'm Samit Patel, I bat, bowl and field." And I just sort of started giggling. Like, it was quite an introduction, really, but we also developed a friendship.
And he shared his joy at watching Nottinghamshire's success from afar.
I must admit, when they won the two trophies, when Dan Christian held up the trophy just most recently as well, I think it was 2 years ago, it was really nice to see. Just seeing the boys hold trophies aloft is really, really special.
But first, we discussed Hussey's approach to T20 in the early days.
Initially, I had no idea how to play it. I failed miserably. I was terrible at it. And then the great Mick Neal pulled me aside and said, "You've actually got a bit more time than what you believe." So he sort of gave me, the answers to the test on how to play T20 cricket. And once he gave me some bit of education about how to play, I really enjoyed playing the game. It was pretty much you're okay to get out. It wasn't, we're never going to get in trouble to get out. So you're always allowed to entertain the crowd, try and hit as many sixes as you possibly can. But it took a long time to actually formulate a few plans or be educated on how to play T20 cricket.
Yeah, and about the crowd as well. How much did you notice a change in that from the crowd you might have had for a championship or a one-day game here to then these T20 crowds starting to develop at Trent Bridge?
Playing at Trent Bridge is—it's just a absolute privilege to. Every time you drive into Trent Bridge, it's a privilege, and to walk out to play at that ground is just an absolute pleasure.
Was that loyalty to clubs something that was special to you as well? You look back at your career, and obviously Notts is a massive part of that, and Victoria out in Oz. Was it special for you to be able to form those bonds with particular clubs?
Well, it is. Because you start something at somewhere and you really want to take it to finish the plan that you've actually started or created. And fortunately, I got on really well with Mick, who was the head coach and director of cricket at that time, and the coaching staff. And I think we all knew that we had something special at Trent Bridge brewing. We just had to keep all the pieces of the puzzle together. And if that was the case, we're definitely going to qualify for finals day and hopefully snag it. Trophy, but also in the other forms of the game, we're going to be dominant as well. So I look back at it now, it's probably, it's 9-10 years, been the highlight of my life, really. It's a very, very special time of my life.
Which can't have been what you expected, I guess, really, for it to have been that bigger part of your life when you arrived here at first.
No, so I arrived early April and it was freezing cold. I didn't really know what to expect. It was almost snowing this day. Richard Hadley spoke about the pleasures and the proud history of the club, and what an opportunity that I have to sort of follow in his footsteps to play. And I didn't really know what I'd got myself into, but fortunately the boys were really welcoming, and I developed a friendship with Ryan Sidebottom, Paul Franks, Chris Reid, Jason Gallion, Mark Elam, and from then on it was just smooth sailing. And yeah, I fell in love with the place, and it was probably one of the things you look back on every year, every domestic season finished in Australia. You couldn't wait to get on that plane to get back out to Nottingham and play some decent cricket. It's very much a pleasure to play in.
Yeah, and you touched on it there. That was a dressing room of some pretty big characters, wasn't it?
Yeah, great characters. But they're also very supportive. So if anyone was ever down or anyone got too ahead of themselves, they always sort of made everything consistent. And one of the things that Jason Gallion always taught me is that doesn't matter if you score 200 in one day or you get out for two ducks in consecutive innings, always sort of try and be as consistent as you possibly can. And I've sort of still carry on that legacy now. It's a wonderful trait to have.
Now, the man everyone's wanted to hear from in the past week or two has been Samit Patel. He's played in every single edition of the English T20 comp all the way back to 2003. I think there's only three or four men who've managed to do that in England as well. What were your first impressions of Samit, who would have been, 17, 18 maybe at that time?
Yeah, he's just a little pup, a little kid, and he had enough courage, I guess, to walk over and introduce himself. And I still remember it to the day. It was photo day at Trent Bridge Media Day, and he walked over, this young sort of even shy kid, and walked over, "Hi, I'm Samit Patel. I bat, bowl and field." And I just sort of started giggling. Like, I didn't really know how to take it, whether he's being serious or joking or, yeah, it was quite an introduction, really. But we also developed a friendship. We changed together next to each other for many a year. And the way he's developed into one of the better T20 players and Red Bull players for Nottingham, Nottinghamshire, for out their journey, it's a true testament to him. He's lasted longevity in the game as well. And I really enjoyed playing with Sam. He's a ripping kid.
How much did it mean to you to captain Notts as well? I know you did it for a bit when Stephen Fleming wasn't here in first class, but then to captain the T20 side in 2010 as well.
Yeah, so I was a reluctant captain. I think Chris Reid was the captain of the club at that stage, and he sort of needed a break, and Mick sort of asked if I'd like to step in. And I thought Chris was doing a wonderful job being captain and leader of two forms of the game. And I sort of understood from his point of view if he'd like to have a break. So, yeah, loved taking it on. It was lots of pressure involved, and you're going to try and motivate to get the best out of every player amongst the squad. But fortunately, I had good strong leaders around, with Paul Franks, Chris Reid, Steve Mullaney at that stage was coming through, Michael Lum. So we always had Ricky Wessels as well, Sam Purcell. So we always had some decent players, but also had a really good relationship with Mick, who provided a lot of structure and a lot of strategy behind the scenes in order for us to be relatively successfully in the white format.
Yeah, I was going to come on to Paul Franks, actually. Another man who's obviously been involved at Notts for that entire T20 period. There was a point when, I think after you retired, he was asked in an interview to sum you up in three words. I don't know if that was something you ever saw him do at the time.
No, I didn't know. Please help me.
He went with, his first two were quirky and destructive.
Quirky, like Derek Randall, a Notts great, like Derek Randall quirky?
I presume so. Well, I think you've talked in terms of the batting style in particular, and the way you kind of adapted around the game and the format. So is that something that you were sort of keen to do, to find different ways to score, different ways to play?
Well, yeah, effectively. It's quite a good summation on me and my batting, I guess. But because I batted middle order, you could either walk out their third ball of the innings or you could walk out in the 19th over. So you had to really adapt to any situation, so, and to different fields and the different strategies. So you do have to think outside the square and be a little bit quirky, I could say, in order to score runs and make the most amount of runs for your team. So it's probably reasonably accurate, really.
His third word on the list was friend, which is always nice to see there. And I know that he spoke about his time here when you were here, and Stephen Laney spoke about spending Christmas, I think, with you in Australia at some point. How important are those bonds that you make in the dressing room, and how much more does it make it mean when you win, I guess?
Well, friends, it's a nice term. And, yeah, I still class Mick and Chris Reid, Jason Gallion, Paul Franks, people I played with, Mark Elam, Ryan Sodland, and Steve Mullaney, like you just mentioned, Christmas time, place, one year. It's probably a few years ago now, actually. But, yeah, it's even more special when you win games of cricket with your mates, because, you know, everybody's trying and going in the same direction. And I just hope that Steve Mullaney is sort of carrying on that legacy that, we always, every time you play for Notts, you always have each other's back, regardless of the situation. And when I first walked in the doors at Trent Bridge back in 2004, in April, first meeting Mick, I just knew we were going to get on famously. He was very determined, and he always wanted the best for the club. So I knew we were always going to hit it off, because we had the same goals and many things in common.
Now, if you think about the period you played here in T20 cricket, who do you think was the best player you shared the Notts dressing room with?
Well, there's probably two. Well, Kevin Peterson originally, he was just phenomenal. I think he was just ahead of his time in T20 cricket. But then there was Mark Elam, probably the second. He made 90 against Yorkshire when we were 50 for 5, and chasing about 180. And Elam comes out and hits 90 off 30 balls to end up winning us the game. And some of the cleanest hitting you'll ever see. So it was, wonderful performance. But then Chris Reid as a finisher, he was underutilized. He was just a phenomenal player and wicket keeper, and his longevity in the game should be always celebrated, because he was a phenomenal player. And then as a fast bowler, I still think Ryan Sidebottom is still the pinnacle of Knott's white ball cricket. He was just excellent. Every time he played, he was just always, always seemed to get 2 for 20, 2 for 15, 3 for 30. You know, he was always dominant. And then lastly, but Sadat Patel is probably the most consistent player after Mark Elam all the way through in white ball cricket for Knott's. He just a phenomenal competitor. If he missed out with the bat, he always contributed with the ball, always run out. He always did the freaky things. So, I'm just very thankful that Sam was on our team for most of what my trend reached to.
Yeah, I guess he lived up to the introduction of our bat, bowl and field. He has done a bit of all three in so many games out here.
Yeah, he did. There's just so many opportunities, so many times where he'd make, like against Derby. Derby used to be his team. He used to always sort of score 70 or 80 off about 35 balls and miss the game. Or if he missed out against another team, he'd get 3 for 20 in order to win the game. Or if we were struggling with an opening bowler, he'd say, yeah, I'll do it, no problem at all. If there's a short boundary, Sam, don't worry, I'll do it. And he always get 2 for 20 that game. You know, he's just a... just an excellent competitor and a bloke who always, always contributed to the team.
And if you think about the players you would have played against in T20 in that period, anyone stand out?
Probably Ian Harvey was the best. Probably a little bit biased because he's Australian and a good friend of mine as well. But age was never an issue for him. He always used to come out and just play the same way. And every time we seemed to play him, he always get a high 70 or 100 and take his 2 for 20. He was just a phenomenal player. So, and it didn't matter where he was playing. I think he played Yorkshire 1 year, Gloucester. I think he even played for Derby too. So it's just, he was just a phenomenal player. But for an Englishman, there was, mate, there's just so many. Michael Lum was excellent against. Paul Collingwood was excellent too. There's just so many good players floating around in T20 cricket. And I guess that went to play the 2010 World Cup in the West Indies, because you guys were so much more advanced than other nations around the world with T20 cricket.
And I know that even though it's a little while since you left here as a player, that those links are still strong. I know you came back to see the team, I think, in 2019 when they were at Edgbaston. And obviously in the BBL, you've been involved with some Outlaws of the Present as well. How special is it to you that you're still part of the Nottinghamshire story, if you like, and still sort of regarded in that way?
It's humbling, I guess. It's really nice, but awkward at the same time. I like to think of my cricket time at Trent Bridge. It's finished now, so whatever happens, happened. Now it's up to the new current crop. And I must admit, when they won the two trophies, when Dan Christian held up the trophy just most recently as well, I think it was 2 years ago, it was really nice to see. And like, be running the dog at 6 a.m. back in Australia and be texting Mull saying, why didn't we get over the line in a qualifying game? And it's always follow from afar, but just seeing the boys hold trophies aloft is really, really special, even though I'm not even playing or not even really a part of it. But it's always good to see your team win. I guess I'm a supporter these days. But I look back at my time and, with fond memories and really enjoy it.
Well, fingers crossed we give you plenty to cheer on again in the next few weeks. And best of luck as well for the rest of the IPL.
Much appreciated. Thanks, Matt. Really enjoyed this.